Any questions from what we did till now? So today's lecture, we are going to focus on what is called mean field theory. The idea is depicted in this picture, typically in condensed matter systems, something like this. You have many particles, and these particles are interacting with each other. The idea is to replace this system by one particle, and all other particles are included as an average density. So in this picture, you have one particle that sees an average density of all other particles. So in this approximation, you include the effects of interactions between the particles on average. Now, let me mention a few things that suggest that this approximation should never work. So imagine you have one electron. Imagine all of these are electrons. If they are all electrons, if one electron is here, that means electronic density all around it should be suppressed. Electrons repel each other. So if you have an electron present, all other electrons would like to avoid this electron. So the density should be suppressed in this region, and it should increase away from it. So this effect is called, these are correlation effects. All other electrons see this electron and try to avoid it. So in this picture, we are assuming that this density is going to be uniform. So a priori, we should not expect mean field to be a good approximation. Another thing is that there are complicated mean field correlations, and we are only including them on average. Despite this, it turns out that there are some systems where mean field theory provides an excellent description. So the trick is how to use this approximation. There are many ways to use this approximation. And if you are lucky or clever and you find the right mean field parameter, you can describe the real system by just one particle and an average background. So that is the goal of this lecture. And we can start with the and the main point is what have we gained? Well, we have reduced this many particle problem to a single particle problem now, and this single particle problem we can solve easily using solving single particle Schrodinger equation. So let's start with a general formalism. Let's consider that let's imagine that the system has two types of particles. So the total Hamiltonian we have is H naught plus some interaction potential. H naught is some quantum number nu. The energy, the single particle energy terms for A nu dagger A nu plus some quantum number mu, sum over mu, and now we have the B type particles. And now I write down the interaction term, and I assume here that the only relevant interaction is between A-type particles and B-type particles. So what that means is I have A nu dagger, B mu dagger, B mu prime, A nu prime. So in general, you will have two particle terms coming from A particles interacting with A particles, other A particles, B particles interacting with other B particles, but we are going to ignore them for the moment and consider the case when the only relevant interactions in the problem are between two species of particles. The idea is to define what is called deviation operators. So we define these operators, d nu nu prime, as these operators, a nu nu prime, minus their expectation value. Let me define E mu mu prime . So I've just defined two new quantities. I haven't really done anything. And now what I'm going to do is I'm going to write interaction potential in terms of these quantities. So these are called deviation operators. So this is just an expectation value. And so you have to consider that there is an identity operator here. So this is equation for operators. So I can write down the interaction potential. Now, I'm assuming A and B are different species or different types of particles. So these operators commute. I can move them around. Now this, I can replace this term by d nu nu prime. Let me know if the writing is small and you can't read. So d nu nu prime plus the expectation value A nu dagger, A nu prime. Similarly, this B nu dagger B mu prime, this can be replaced by E mu mu prime plus expectation value B mu dagger B mu prime. And while I will expand all these things, I can rewrite this in terms of these operators. And I'll write down the result. So you will have d nu nu prime, expectation value b mu dagger b mu prime plus e mu mu prime, expectation value a nu dagger a nu prime plus a term that has two deviation operators. A nu dagger a nu prime p mu dagger p mu prime. Now the approximation, the mean field approximation, is setting this equal to zero. Now, this is not, it's not always clear that this term should be negligible, but this is where we are going to make the approximation. So we are going to ignore these two the product of two deviation operators. And then we are going to rewrite this d nu nu prime as a nu dagger. So we are going to rewrite this. We'll use these definitions and rewrite this expression. And what I will get is nu nu prime mu mu prime v nu mu nu prime mu prime. and I will have a minus sign. So I ignored this term. I use the definitions of D and E operators. From here, I'll get the product of two expectation values, one from here, one from here. And then there will be two of these will be minus. There is one plus, so I'm left with one minus here. Now, this interaction term only has single particle operators. This is a single particle operator, and this is a single particle operator. These are just numbers. These are expectation values. So we'll call this interaction potential as the mean field interaction potential. And the idea is that now you can write down the Hamiltonian as H naught, what you had here, plus H mean field. Now, because this Hamiltonian now only has single particle operators, we can solve this Hamiltonian, calculate its eigenstates. So within this approximation, we can solve the problem. Whether this represents the system we are interested in or not depends on what expectation values you choose. Now, there is an important constraint that we impose on these expectation values. So you can say, OK, I will choose them to be 1 point something. You can choose anything you want. But the idea is to restrict these values by imposing what is called self-consistency. Which is a simple algorithm which says, so to write down this Hamiltonian, which is H naught, sorry, this should be V. So to write down this Hamiltonian, replacing it by V mean field, you need to know these expectation values, right? To calculate these expectation values, you need to know the Hamiltonian. So what are expectation values, for example, of these operators? Expectation value at finite temperature, you can use so this is the definition of expectation value of this operator. To calculate these expectation values, you need to know the Hamiltonian. So you follow this algorithm. You make a guess, any guess for these expectation values. So now you have a Hamiltonian. You use this Hamiltonian to calculate these expectation values. Now use these expectation values. You have the new Hamiltonian. Calculate the expectation values again. Then you will have a new Hamiltonian, and keep doing it till the expectation value you put in is what you get back when you use that Hamiltonian to calculate the expectation values. And through this procedure, you can restrict the values or the number of possibilities for choosing these expectation values. So this is a reasonably stringent criteria on this theory, but still it's very general. So the expectation values using which are same, so through this self-consistent procedure, when you have a Hamiltonian that is written in terms of expectation values, and when this Hamiltonian is used to calculate the expectation values, you get the same thing. This choice we'll refer to as A new dagger, A new prime, mean field. And basically, this just means that so H mean field will now be the Hamiltonian that uses these expectation values. And you will have a similar expression for B dagger, B mu dagger, B mu prime. Any questions? So now, this is still a bit tricky. We don't know how to choose these expectation values. The reason is the following. So in this interaction Hamiltonian that I wrote, this nu prime, mu mu prime are some quantum numbers. Say they are momentum and spin quantum numbers. Say there are total n quantum numbers in our system. So to choose an expectation value like this, this nu can take n values, this nu prime can take n values. So you have n square ways of choosing this. Which one is the right one? We don't know. So usually here you would use, when this happens, you would use some physical insight or some symmetry properties of the system to make a guess of what quantum numbers I should use in choosing such an expectation value. So we'll take an example and to illustrate this properly. But in general, there are simply way too many possibilities. And most of them turn out to be, they don't provide a good description of the system. And if that happens, either try a new quantum number, a new way of doing this, or use some other methods, say numerical methods to diagonalize the whole Hamiltonian. So it's possible, it's very possible that mean field theory does not describe your system. So there are limits to what mean field theory can do. But it still describes some of the most interesting properties like Hartree. So you can calculate screening or dielectric function of materials for electron gases, superconductivity. A lot of phenomena can be described using mean field theory. And then once you have a reasonable description, you can add fluctuations on top of this mean field description to even go a bit beyond mean field description. Now I'm going to take an example. And we discussed this slightly when we discussed Jellium model. So Hartree-Fock approximation. Now what we are going to do is we are going to assume that we have indistinguishable particles, or we don't have A and B type of particles, but we have electrons. Then the Hamiltonian will be, again, H naught plus V interaction. Let's say this H naught is sum over some quantum numbers nu, chi nu, C nu dagger, C nu, and then the interaction potential, which now I'm putting a factor of half for double counting, because now I'm assuming them to be electrons, and this interaction is going to be Coulomb interaction. So for the moment, we are going to assume that these quantum numbers, nu, mu, nu prime, and mu prime, are a combination of momentum and spin. Then we'll take the example when we'll ignore the spin, and then later on we'll include spin. When we will include spin, we can see that this model also predicts ferromagnetism. So the idea now is to do same thing that we did here, use mean field theory to simplify this interaction potential. Now, because these are indistinguishable particles, this is slightly tricky. So remember Wick's theorem, we know that if we have expectation value of four operators, I know that there are going to be two terms, so I can do two ways of doing the contractions. Now this is a result that we'll keep in mind, and we'll use Wick's theorem to guide us in choosing how we should replace, how we should use these expectation values to simplify this Hamiltonian. So from this, you can see that there are four ways of choosing expectation values. You can choose this, 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 or this. So let's try to do a simple-minded thing first. So we start with product of four operators. Let's say C mu dagger, C mu prime. What I'm going to do is I'm going to replace this by So I'm going to use this quantity, and let me just write it down. So I'm going to add and subtract expectation value from it. Minus the expectation value. And now I have C nu prime. This quantity I'm going to define as deviation d mu mu prime. In general, this quantum number nu is different from mu mu prime. So you can move this around here. You won't get a sign change. So this term can also be written as d mu mu prime plus expectation value c mu dagger c mu prime multiplied by c nu dagger c nu prime, which I'm going to again add and subtract expectation value and write it as d nu nu prime plus C nu dagger C nu prime. Now I'm again going to ignore the term that involves the product of two deviation operators, and then I'm going to put this back. Deviation operators back in the original operators, and you can see that this term will be equal to C mu dagger, C mu prime, C nu dagger, C nu prime, plus C nu dagger, C nu prime, expectation value C mu dagger, C mu prime minus C mu dagger C mu prime and C nu dagger C nu prime. So what we have done here is very similar to what we did for distinguishable particles. So now let's ask ourselves the question, is this all that we should replace the interaction potential with? Say we do that. Now imagine that, so basically what we are saying is we're going to replace this quantity, these four operators, by this. And that will be our approximation. Now imagine you want to calculate some expectation value in this Hamiltonian that will involve expectation value of this term, which is like this. We know Wick's theorem tells us that there are two ways, there will be two terms in it, this term and this term. Now, this term only will give you expectation values like this. So when you take expectation value here, you will only get C mu mu prime or C nu nu prime. So never in your, if you use this to approximate this interaction potential, you will never have an expectation value that involves, for example, C nu dagger C mu prime or C mu dagger C nu prime, right? So if we do only this, we know from Wick's theorem that this is not going to be the full picture. Any questions? So how to complete this? So motivated by Wick's theorem, we are going to consider, let's reorder these four operators and write C nu dagger, C mu dagger, C nu prime as minus C nu dagger, C mu prime, C mu dagger, C nu prime. Now, I'm going to do the same thing that I did here. This, I will add and subtract to this quantity the expectation value. And to this, I'm going to add and subtract the expectation value. And I will write the whole thing down. And I will ignore the terms so I can define deviation operators d nu mu prime and d mu nu prime. I will ignore the term that involves two deviation operators and write down the final result. So this quantity here, this will become d nu mu prime plus expectation value c nu dagger c mu prime. So this is d nu mu prime. This quantity here will become d mu nu prime plus expectation value c mu dagger c nu prime. And then I'll ignore the product of two deviation operators, and I'm just going to write down the final result. I will get minus, and then I can put again in terms of these operators, and the final result would be C mu dagger C nu prime C nu dagger C mu prime minus C nu dagger C mu prime and then I will have plus a term where I have both expectation values. Any questions so far? So I want to do mean field theory. And there are many ways of doing this. First, I take the operator product as it is. I define deviation operators in terms of mu mu prime and nu nu prime. And I expand, ignore the product of two deviations. I get this term. Then from Wick's theorem, I know that this cannot be the whole picture. So I consider the same product of operators, but one operator, commute one operator and choose the expectation values slightly differently, and then I'll do this whole procedure again, and I get these additional terms. Now, the whole Hamiltonian, so I will replace this interaction term by the sum of these two terms. So the total Hamiltonian that I have, I will write V interaction as V Hartree and V Falk . The first term, this is called Hartree term, and the second term is called the Falk term. So now I can write down the total Hamiltonian. Let me define a notation just for ease. I will call this expectation value C nu dagger, C nu prime, as N nu nu prime. So this is an expectation value. This is just some, this is not an operator, N nu nu prime. This is just a number. In terms of this notation, I can write down the Hartree and Falk terms. So the Hartree term is half sum over mu mu prime nu nu prime. The interaction potential and C mu dagger C mu prime N nu nu prime plus C nu dagger C nu prime N mu mu prime minus N mu mu prime N nu nu prime. And similarly, you can write the Falk term. This will have a minus sign. And you'll have different operators now, the ones that will involve mu and nu. So you will have C mu dagger, C nu prime. So now, so far, we have considered these quantum numbers to be something general. They involve momentum and spin. Now, to move further, let's simplify this a little bit. And now, we are going to assume that, let's consider what is called spinless case. Which means that nu prime, mu, mu prime, these are all momentum quantum numbers. Remember in the tutorial in the first week, using momentum conservation, you can write down, we found a way of writing down the four particle the four operator term, you can, if you have sum over four momentums, you can eliminate one momentum by demanding momentum conservation, and you can write it down in terms of three momentums. Any questions so far? So these two terms I'm going to leave here, and I'm going to come back to them and include spin. But for the moment, let's assume that in these two terms, nu, nu prime, mu, mu prime, they're only momentum. In that case, I can write down this sum over k1, k2, k3, k4, V, K1, K2, K3, K4, so if I have a term like this, you can write it down as sum over K1, K2, and Q, V tilde Q, C, K1 plus Q dagger, K2 minus Q dagger, C, K2, CK1. So the tricks we are, V tilde Q is the Fourier transform of the potential, and the tricks you're going to use are similar to the ones you used in the tutorial. So in the tutorial, you wrote it slightly differently. I think you used minus Q here, plus Q here, but you can also write it this way. You just have to use conservation of momentum. So this is also an approximation. So we assume that the momentum is conserved. So the system has translational invariance. Now, using in this form, the Hartree and Fock terms simplify. So the Hartree term is basically half. Now I have sum over three momentums. Let's call them P, P prime, Q. And let's say V tilde Q. I have C P prime plus Q. C P prime. N P minus Q P. So I've just rewritten the Hartree term over there using P and P primes and changed the order a little bit. You can try to convince yourself that these are the same terms. Now I will write the Fock term. Then I have the product of two n's. Now, these last two terms, these terms are just constants. These are expectation values. So they are going to provide only a shift in energy, and we can ignore them from now on. But we are still left with two terms in the Hartree term and two terms in the Fock term. Now comes, so far this is still pretty general. What I've assumed is conservation of momentum. So I've assumed conservation of momentum in going from sum over four momentums to sum over three momentums in these two terms. Now I want to make further approximations. Why? Because these Hamiltonians still use these ends. And these ends are expectation values defined here. So these expectation values at t equal to 0, at zero temperature, these expectation values are calculated in the ground state of the system. So in the ground state of the mean field Hamiltonian. So we are going to make some assumptions about the properties of this ground state. So this expectation value C nu dagger C nu prime, which in our case, let's just call it CK dagger CK prime. We don't have spin. So now the question is what values we should put in here. So to put in some values, we have to make some approximations. One approximation is that we assume that the ground state of the mean field Hamiltonian respects translational invariance. What that means is if this expectation value is taken in the ground state, the ground state has many electrons. What that means is if you annihilate a particle with momentum k prime, you must create a particle with exactly the same momentum, and only then you will get a non-zero expectation value. But I want to stress the fact that this is just an approximation. In condensed matter systems, this need not be true always. In fact, we discussed something yesterday where momentum was conserved only up to a reciprocal lattice vector, right? So we are going to assume that if you annihilate particle with some momentum k, you must create with the same momentum to get a non-zero expectation value. So what that means is nk k prime can be replaced by delta k k prime nk. So this is an important, it's important to mention that this is just an approximation. In fact, we have seen another case where this approximation does not hold. There is something called charge density wave. And in this case also, we would not expect that you annihilate a particle with momentum k. Even if you create a particle with some other momentum, you can still get finite expectation value. Remember the Peale's instability, where we said if you have a one-dimensional crystal, every other atom would spontaneously move, every other ion would spontaneously move to left or right. So consider that you have this, imagine that you have this system. Now, if the ions have moved like this, the electrons, ions are positively charged, the electrons will also rearrange themselves. And if I plot electron density now, I will get higher electron density here. So the electron density itself would look like, and it will be suppressed in between. So this is how electron density would look like if you have spontaneously every other ion move to the left. And which we, by the way, we proved that this must happen. Now in this system, you can define a wavelength, say this. You can define some wavelength lambda. Corresponding to this lambda, you can define a wave vector q. And in this case, you would find that n k k prime, this would be delta k k plus q. which means that if this is the ground state of your system, you have a charge density wave. It's called charge density wave because it looks like a wave in the electron density looks like a wave. You can annihilate, in this ground state, you can annihilate a particle with momentum, say k, and you can create a particle with momentum k plus q. So the main point here is be careful that this is not always true. So you can't just always replace this by a delta function. Now we have assumed that the ground state, in writing this, we have assumed that the ground state respects translational invariance. Any questions so far? So the main point is, from this point on, whatever we will conclude about the Hartree-Fock terms, that is going to depend on this approximation. So the approximation you're going to make when you write down this expectation value is very important for the conclusions you would derive from it. Now, if I put this in these two terms, you would see, let's discuss the Hartree term, it's easier. So the Hartree term looks like half sum over p prime. Because of delta function, now instead of three sum over momentums, I'm only left with two. I have v tilde 0, cp dagger, cp prime, npp plus cp dagger, cp, and p prime. These two can be combined, just relabel p and p prime. So the Hartree term just becomes pp prime, v tilde 0, and pp . So we have done a lot of simplification. Now, we discussed that there is a divergence in Coulomb interaction. That comes from the long-range nature of Coulomb interactions. The divergence is at r going to infinity, which in Fourier space means q going to 0. So there is 1 over q squared divergence in the interaction potential itself. So this term that I've written here actually diverges. This was the motivation for doing the Jellium model, that we know that this should not bother us because this divergence will be canceled by the other divergences that will come from the ion-ion interactions and ion-electron interactions. So the uniform charge density, uniform positive charge density, that is provided by the ions would cancel this divergence that appears in electron-electron interactions. Any questions so far? However, this is not the, if this was the only thing, only term that we had, we are good. But it turns out that we also have to deal with the Fock term. And when we simplify, or when we use this delta function, we can write down the Fock term . And the Fock term looks like following. You have minus half. You have sum over pp prime. You have v tilde p minus p prime. You have cp dagger cp. n p prime minus the other term. Now, again, I will relabel. So this term appears just from assuming that we have a delta function. So the idea is, because it's a delta function, if you look at the Hartree term, that basically implies Q is 0. And we get that Hartree term. In the Fock term, if you replace this by a delta function, that means that Q should be equal to P minus P prime. And when you put Q to be P minus P prime, we'll get CP dagger CP. That's one term. And here also, we'll get that Q should be now P prime minus P. So you'll get the same term, but P replaced by P prime. You can also combine these two terms. The Coulomb potential, when you take the Fourier component, whether you have P minus P prime or P prime minus P, you will get the same Fourier coefficient. Remember when we did the periodic potential, we replaced it with a star. This is not a periodic potential. This is, now we are talking about Coulomb interactions. So the Fourier coefficient, so in this term, you can replace by P and P prime and combine them. And the Fock term would look like the following. You have a minus sign. You have V tilde. P minus P prime and PP CP dagger CP prime. Any questions so far?
I guess in that definition, the KKE dash.
Yep.
You want the second NK, it's like NKK, like the same
K. This I just wrote for to simplify. Because it's a delta function, you can just use one index.
But then when you like rewrite the Hartree term, you put the NPP.
Yeah, let's just put it back, just to avoid confusion. That's good. So now I can recombine everything. And so the idea is, and then we'll learn an important concept, which is called self-energy. And there are many contributions to this, and there are many ways of calculating it. So what we are going to do next is we are going to combine the Hartree term and Fock term with H naught, that is over there. Now, what we can see is that now both of these Hartree and Fock terms, they look like single particle terms. So I can combine them, and I can write H equal to H naught plus V interaction. Now, this looks like sum over P, some energy, let's say epsilon as a function of P, which is the non-interacting dispersion plus, let's do it in, let me write down one more step. So H naught can be written as sum over P, epsilon P, CP dagger CP. And then I will have V Hartree and V Fock. This can be combined as sum over P, epsilon P, plus a sum over Q, V tilde 0 minus V tilde Q minus P N Q Q. CP dagger CP. Now this term is called self energy. So this whole term what that means is this is the quantity that you add to the non-interacting energies because of interactions. So if you only had single particles, the Hamiltonian would be this term. But you have many particles, and there are Coulomb interactions between the particles. So the way you deal with these Coulomb interactions, because of these interactions, you must add this term to the non-interacting energies. Now, to move further, we have to, okay, so if we assume, so you remember the problem in the tutorial where you used Yukawa potential to calculate an effective mass. This whole term, you can also think of this term, this entire Hamiltonian, as, say, sum over P, say now h bar square, sum P square over 2 m star Cp dagger. So because what I'm doing is all of this, I'm using, and I'm just redefining some effective mass. So in the problem you found, so in the tutorial problem, you did this calculation in position space. You had an integral. What you found is that if you use Yukawa potential, but you make the exponential factor in the Yukawa potential zero, so you only have bare Coulomb interactions, you found that the effective mass goes to zero, which means that self-energy is diverging. Self-energy is infinity if you only use bare Coulomb interactions. You can go back and trace where this infinity is coming from. This infinity is coming from Q equal to P term in the Fock term. So we dealt the Jellium model, the positive background, takes care of the divergence in the Hartree term, but we still have a divergence that is sitting in the Fock term. As a result of this divergence, you get self-energy, which is infinity. We never observe when we make measurements for electron gases, like most metals, we don't see any divergence. Why is that? That is because in these systems, the Coulomb interaction is actually not long range. In these systems, the interactions are screened. So let's spend some time on understanding this divergence. So let me write down the Yukawa potential that we used was E square over mod R exponential minus kappa mod R. Or maybe kappa naught. So let's first discuss, let's do it this way. So we see that if we use bare Coulomb interaction without this exponential, we see that there is a divergence in the self energy. And we want to make sense of this divergence because we never measure anything, any correlation function that actually diverges in the lab. And the resolution is that we must use this interaction potential instead. What this exponential does is this potential is no longer long range. If you just have 1 over r potential, you still get a divergence at r equal to infinity. In this potential, you would not get a divergence at r going to infinity or q going to 0. In fact, in the tutorial, you found out that for recover potential, this Fourier transform will go as 1 over q square plus kappa naught square. Right? Now, the reason in electron gas the interactions become or act like short range is because of screening. So the idea of screening is the following. We have uniform positive charge background, and we have electron gas. What we want to do is, say we have a test charge, a positive charge. We want to calculate its electric field at some point here. Let's say this is distance r. You want to calculate electric field here. And the rest of electrons, basically all of the electrons would see this electric field and would move in the influence of this electric field. If you use Coulomb interactions, you find out that correlation functions calculated using this electric field diverge. What happens in the electron gas is this positive charge is going to attract negative charge density around it. And this charge density I'm calling rho induced. As a result of this rho induced, the electric field that you have calculated at this point, it turns out that this is going to be much weaker than what it would be if you don't include this rho induced. Does that make sense? And it's because of this induced charge density that the interactions, the real interactions or the physical interactions, are always screened, because we have moving charges that screen the test charges. This argument you can also apply to negative charge. If you have a negative charge, what you will find is that electron density will be suppressed in the vicinity. What that means is that the positive charge background of the ions are in the background. That will screen this test charge. And again, the electric field calculated at some faraway distance is going to be much weaker than if you only use bare Coulomb interactions.
Shouldn't it be smaller? The electric field?
Yeah, did I say?
Yeah.
So it's much weaker than what it would be if you use bare Coulomb interactions. So.
Strength.
Then it's smaller.
So electric field, the strength is smaller. Is electric field is weaker. So, I'm thinking of electric field as just some d cube r, rho r, or r, right? So the effect. So if you only have the bare charge, you will get some value of electric field. So now if this is dr prime, I should use this. But essentially, what I should use is rho induced. I should include rho induced in it. That reduces the effective charge and reduces the effective electric field. Essentially, it gives the interaction a finite range. What that means is if the electrons are close by, they still feel electric field due to each other. But if they are far apart, they're not going to feel the electric field produced by other electrons. So the main lesson here is that in condensed matter systems, most of the time we see Coulomb interactions. If there are other free electrons, if we have many free electrons, which there are in condensed matter system, we must replace pair Coulomb interactions with Yukawa potential with a finite screening length. This is called Thomas Fermi screening length that we discussed in the tutorial. And that is the real physical interaction. And with those interactions, there is no divergence in the self-energy. The effective mass is not vanishing. And we can calculate all of the correlation functions. Any questions so far? So next, what we are going to do is we are going to put the spin of the problem back in the spin back in the quantum numbers and discuss magnetism. Have you discussed self-energy in quantum field theory? So what we discussed there in, yes?
I was not going to ask because I didn't want to talk about QFC, but now that you're talking about it, I need to ask. So you're saying that the IR divergences are not a problem here because you should regulate the potential with the exponential of Yukawa. But in QFT, the self-energy IR divergences are canceled by the soft brush Stralunk when the electron is moving and you emit soft photons. How do you relate these pictures?
So in QFT, if you take the bare, if you don't have this exponential, you would deduce that the mass, you regulate it with the mass, the exponential. You have mass in the exponential. So if you have unscreened Coulomb interactions in QFT, you would say this represents photons with zero mass and bare Coulomb interaction. So it is, short answer is, this is not such a system because we have many other electrons. So this system is slightly different. There is no relativistic correction in it. But the connection that I'm going to make is more about how to calculate this quantity, this self-energy. So what is this term? This term appears in the single particle term due to interactions. So in general, this term can be very complicated to compute. So your question is about the divergence, which I have not answered. Let's put it this way. I'm going to make, so we can discuss that later. I think I would have to understand the question further. But if I understand, does a question mean that there are other ways of getting rid of the divergence. Is that your point, or?
We can discuss it.
Yeah, we can discuss that later on. But I mean, this is a pretty standard way of including, of canceling the divergence, that we use the Yukawa potential. Why you should use Yukawa potential can be motivated in different ways. Now, what the tools that you have used in QFT help us a lot in calculating this self-energy term. So the idea is that this term includes the effects of interactions. So you include, you will compute all, you include all of the terms in the Hamiltonian that, so when you calculate the expectation value, you will include all of the terms that have at least one interaction. And so, for example, consider a diagram like this. So you include all interaction diagrams to which you can exactly attach two external legs, and that includes at least one interaction, and you cannot cut this diagram into two by cutting a fermion line. So what that means is this diagram forms a part, is included in self-energy, and this diagram is included. Actually, to first order, I think these are the only diagrams you can have. This diagram would be included. So this diagram you cannot cut into two by cutting a fermionic line, but this diagram is not included. So this is not there in self-energy. This is not there in self-energy. All these diagrams are. Next week, we might have more time, so we can discuss this further. So this is just a useful way of calculating what is the quantity that we should add to the Hamiltonian or to the single particle energies that include the effect of interactions. And in fact, these diagrams you can simply write from the definition of self-energy itself. So it's basically entering, it's renormalizing, or it's in, to these diagrams, I can attach two external legs. So one is the incoming, one will denote the incoming fermion and the outgoing fermion. So basically, these diagrams are coming between C dagger C terms. So you can write down all these. Why you don't include these? Well, if you cut this in half, you've already included this and this separately, so you don't want to overcount the contribution of those interaction terms. So we can discuss screening in detail also. Later on, next week. And there are many ways of doing screening itself. What I discussed there is classical picture. You can do classical screening, semi-classical screening, or full quantum calculation using Hartree-Fock. And these, depending on what method you use, you would get something for the correlation function. But all of these calculations, the basic idea is that you don't have long-range interactions. The interactions become short-range or finite-range. Now what we are going to discuss next is we will put back spin in the quantum numbers. Any questions so far? So we are changing topic, and I'll just introduce. So the topic we are interested in now is called Stoner model for ferromagnetism. Now, the idea for why we should use mean field theory or this Hartree-Fock et al. To describe ferromagnetism is based on phase transitions. These expectation values that we use in mean field theory, we impose the self-consistent criteria on them. So that restricts the possible values we can have for these expectation values. The possible expectation values or the possible ground states that the system can have. So using mean field theory, you can study phase transitions. So you calculate these expectation values in a phase, and if you choose this expectation value, or if it turns out that in the phase transition, this expectation value is the order parameter, then you can compute this expectation value, and you'll see that it is zero in one phase, and it is finite in some other phase. What that means is you'll consider two different ground states. You'll use the same operators. You will calculate the expectation value of this combination of operators in one ground state. You'll calculate expectation value of the same combination in another ground state, and you'll compare the two, which has lower free energy, and that would be the stable phase. So what we want to do here is discuss ferromagnetism. So what we are going to do is we are now considering spin-full electrons. And we are going to make a big simplification, which is we already saw that the long-range nature of interactions makes things a bit messy. There are divergences. But we do know that we can deal with these divergences in an organized way. To this, now, because we are only interested in the spin degrees of freedom, we are going to make a big simplification. And we are going to say that the interactions are point-like, or they're like delta functions. They're extremely short-range. So now we have we make an assumption that interactions are short-range. They're delta function-like. So when you take the Fourier transform of these interactions, what you will get is a constant. So in this, when we are writing down the Hartree-Fock Hamiltonian up there, the interaction matrix element, we had VQ over here. So we have this VQ. We are going to assume that this is independent of Q. So the Fourier transform is just a constant. This is called Hubbard model. So what we are starting with is this Hamiltonian. So we have a sum over k and sigma, some energies chi k, ck sigma dagger, ck sigma, plus u over 2 omega. Omega, omega is the system volume. Sum over k prime q, sigma, sigma prime, ckq, sigma, dagger, ck prime minus q, sigma prime, ck prime, sigma prime, ck sigma. So what we have done here is we've ignored the momentum dependence of the potential. This comes outside. Next, what we should do is we should try to define expectation values. So what we want to do is use mean field theory to simplify this Hamiltonian. Now again, we can see that we can use Wick's theorem. There are two terms that should contribute. So when we do mean field approximation, we should be a bit careful and include both the Hartree term and the Fock term. So I can write down I don't think we'll be able to finish it all today. So what I can discuss is already the result that we would, or let's try to build some intuition about what just this approximation that the potential is short range, what does that tell us? Why this assumption alone should tell us that the system can potentially be magnetic. How? Well, if we know Coulomb repulsion, electrons will repel each other. If the potential is short range, that means say you have an electron here. Let's say this electron has spin up. Now, Pauli principle tells us that at this site in R, if you have the electron, so A, all electrons will repel each other, but a site that is this point, at this point, you will not have another electron. But if you write this in momentum space, label this state, the same state can be occupied by a different spin. Right? So if you include this effect, so only if the interactions are short range, that means the only particles, only electrons that will interact are electrons of opposite spin. Does that make sense? So if the only electrons that interact are electrons of opposite spin, that means I can minimize the potential of the potential energy of the system by ensuring that the system is spin polarized, which would mean if all electrons in the system have the same spin, then our argument tells us that the interaction energy of this system would be minimum because only opposite spin electrons interact. So just using the short range nature of interactions, we can at least see that we may expect some magnetic order in the system, or we may expect that the ground state of this Hamiltonian will have all spins or can have a phase where all spins are pointing in the same direction. Any questions? Okay, so let's end here and we'll continue tomorrow.